Good morning. This is Conservation Corner on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP, in Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today I'm here with Laurel Wilson. She is the Invasive Species Coordinator for both Cook and Lake Counties, and we'll be talking about terrestrial invasive species. So welcome, Laurel.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And so can you explain a little bit more about what your position is?
So basically what my job is to do is to work with the members of the Lake and Cook County invasives teams to help them effectively control invasive species on their properties. I also do a lot of education and outreach with the public and try to help with some private landowners as well to do control on their property. So there's kind of a control side and coordinating efforts side, but then also doing just education and outreach and making sure everyone knows about invasive species.
What is the Lake County Invasives Team and who are its members?
Sure. So the Lake County team just came together last year in 2014, and the members are some of our local county organizations, so Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District. Also at the state level, we have the Department of Transportation for Minnesota and the Nature Conservancy, which is a pretty big nonprofit organization. There are also some local organizations like Sugarloaf, the North Shore Stewardship Association that runs Sugarloaf Cove in Schroeder, which is actually in Cook County technically, and also the 1854 Treaty Authority and Wolf Ridge Environmental Learning Center are a part of it, and then also the Forest Service, U.S. Forest Service, Superior National Forest are the big players for the Lake County Invasives Team. And basically, so they came together in 2014 by signing this Memorandum of Understanding, which kind of solidifies their agreement to work together to control non-native invasive species across jurisdictional boundaries. So to work together to control invasive plants, but also coordinating efforts to control and spread education about aquatic invasive species as well.
And what different projects have you been involved in this summer?
Well, we've been doing some outreach in Finland at the community center there, working mostly with the youth programs at the Finland Community Center. We did a weed pull, so pulling some invasive plants from the area around the community center. Also, there was a population of purple loosestrife spotted near Lax Lake, so I went around and talked to private landowners about some issues with that and just tried to help them with identification in that area. Also trying to help coordinate the treatment of another species called Japanese barberry in the Larsemont area. I also, in coordination with the Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District, did some roadside surveys on county roads in the county because for all of the monitoring that's been done of invasive plant species in the county, a lot of the county roads and more in the southern part of the county were not very well mapped. So I went along with the Soil and Water Conservation District and did some mapping.
And how will those maps be used?
So with this data, we will be using it to inform some control activities, mostly because it's on county road right-of-way. The County Highways Department will be using it to tell them where they should be mowing or not mowing at certain times of the year and where they can do some treatment.
Will the maps be made available for the public to see?
Well, the maps will be submitted to a nationwide reporting system that is available to the public as well as some of our partners online. It's called EDMAPS. That's EDDMAPS.org. So that stands for Early Detection and Distribution Mapping Service. And pretty much anyone can go and upload or report invasive species sightings on this website. And then you can go and look and see what's been found in your area as well. You just have to create an account. So this data that we've collected over the summer will be uploaded onto this site, and then anyone can really go and access it and find out what species were found where.
Okay, so I'd like to move on now and talk about some specific invasive species that we have here in Lake County.
Sure, that sounds great.
Well, Japanese barberry has been popping up on the radar here in Lake County. And can you describe what that looks like?
Sure. Well, Japanese barberry is a woody plant, so it's like a little shrub, has lots of thin stems, and it also has pretty distinct oval or rounded leaves that grow in clusters along the stem of the plant. Also, it has barberry.
Barbs.
On the stem. So it's pretty pokey, not something you want to get in a tangle with. Another key characteristic are these oblong red berries that it forms, and that those will be on the plant in the fall. So right now you should be able to see those red berries, and that should be pretty distinct.
And where are they generally found?
Well, these species are here, or this species is here, because we planted it. So a lot in old homesteads, when you find it in the woods, it's usually spread from an area that it's been planted. So in somebody's yard or old home farmstead or homestead is where you would probably find it in Lake County. And it is, we do have a large population in the Larsemont area. So if you're within probably 2 or 3 miles from this original area, you probably have it in your woods.
Do you know if it likes sandy soil or more clay?
Well, the habitat, I mean, it can invade shaded and open forests, wetlands, old fields, and disturbed areas. So it has a pretty wide range of different habitats that it can live in. It's originally from Eastern Asia, as its name, Japanese barberry, suggests. But it is found throughout Minnesota, and I think more maybe in the southern part of the state. It's been a problem. This is the furthest north population in Minnesota that we found in the Larsemont area.
I see. So is it a priority species that we would want to make sure to keep on top of before it spreads further north?
Yeah, and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is recognizing that it has become problematic in forest communities and other communities, and they are starting to move towards listing it as a noxious weed, and then that will regulate its sale. But right now it's still available for purchase in the nursery trade. It's just being phased out. So it is one that the state is concerned about and that we are concerned about here in Lake County.
And what are the concerning aspects of Japanese barberry?
Well, it really grows very aggressively, so it can pretty much carpet an area and nothing else will grow underneath it because no light can reach the surface of the soil. So it hurts our herbaceous plants that grow on the ground, but also any tree regeneration. They wouldn't be able to compete with these thick stands of Japanese barberry. So just the aggressive nature of the growth of this species is why we're concerned about it as far as the health of an ecosystem goes.
Mm-hmm.
But also, once things are listed with the Department of Agriculture, they can, if you have large populations of them on your property, you'll be required to try to control or eradicate them from your property, and that can end up hurting your property values as well.
Okay, and I know I've read some research about Japanese barberry harboring populations of deer ticks. Have you read that research?
I have read the research.
Yeah. I mean, I just know that I don't know who did the studies, if it was the University of Pennsylvania or something like that, but I do know that they found that there are higher populations of deer ticks in infested forests with Japanese barberry.
That makes sense, and I know that deer really don't like to eat the Japanese barberry, so they'll pick off the native species or put more pressure on the native species in the ecosystem because they won't eat the Japanese barberry, so that can mm-hmm. continue to grow, and the native species get munched on.
What is the best way to control Japanese barberry?
Sure. When you have smaller plants, you can use something like a weed wrench, so it attaches to the base of the stem of the plant. Then you put pressure on the lever, and it uproots the plant. So if you're going to do something like that, you have to make sure to remove all of the root system or it can resprout. Mm-hmm. So that's a good option.
And can I just interrupt really quick and say that Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District has recently purchased one of these instruments, and we are looking at having it available for people to check out over the weekend and use on their property.
Yeah, great. So, another way that you can remove Japanese barberry is by using fire. And so this isn't a great option in all situations, but if you are doing any prescribed burning on your property or are comfortable doing that, you can burn it in the early spring or late fall, and that should set it back or control it in some cases. So another control method is, of course, using chemicals. And when you have a larger population, this can be the most cost-effective and, you know, time-efficient way of controlling an invasive species. So for a woody plant such as Japanese barberry, you can do a full year treatment of chemicals, and that's usually best in the early spring or late fall because our invasive woody plants get their leaves before the native species do and keep them later in the fall. So if you apply at times when the native species aren't actively growing, then we don't risk impacting them quite as much as if you're spraying in the middle of the summer when everything has their leaves on them. So there are also chemical options for treating Japanese barberry, but you should definitely seek out more information and guidance if you're going to employ any of those techniques. And
how about common buckthorn and also maybe glossy buckthorn?
Sure, let's talk about buckthorn. So common buckthorn is a little bit more common than our glossy buckthorn, but both are actually found in Lake County. Buckthorn is another woody plant. It can be a shrub and grow underneath the larger tree overstory, but it can also create fairly large trees as well. And it develops these thick stands in the understory. And again, like Japanese barberry, shades out the competition, all of the native species, and creates just dense monocultures of itself.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that there are male and female trees. So really, it's just the females that have the berries.
Right, yeah. So it has these dark purple berries in the fall and through the winter. It'll hold on to them. And like you said, there are male trees that produce just female flowers. So they're just producing pollen. And then there are the female trees that then produce the actual berries and the seed.
Where are we most likely to come across buckthorn?
So buckthorn can be found pretty much anywhere. It has a wide range of tolerance for different ecosystems. So it can be found on forest borders, along roadsides, fence rows, riverbanks, and occasionally even in wet areas like swamps. But it's originally from Europe.
Do you know how did it first come over here?
I believe people brought it over to use as hedgerows for privacy screens. So people planted it originally, but then it's just really taken off since then. And it's a pretty big problem throughout the state, but mostly in the southern part of the state. But I would say this is the biggest up-and-coming species in Lake County to be looking out for, because it is here and it is a problem, and we just need to start addressing it before it gets to the rates like it is in the Twin Cities and further south in Minnesota.
Yeah. So how does it spread?
It spreads by seed. So the female trees, like we talked about, produce the berries, and these berries get eaten by birds and other animals and then spread out that way. So anywhere you can see a bird perch, probably you have some buckthorn coming up underneath it if you're in a high concentration of buckthorn area. But then they can also just drop off right next to the trees and grow there as well.
So again, why are we concerned about buckthorn? What kind of problems does it present?
Sure. It definitely has very harmful impacts on the native vegetation. So it grows in the understory. It can grow in shaded areas and creates dense monocultures of itself, like I said. And it also can produce a chemical that decreases the ability of our native species to grow. So it's called allelopathy. And it has those chemicals that stay in the soil and don't allow other species to establish, don't allow for the germination of their seed.
And what's the best way to address a buckthorn infestation?
Once you have a large infestation, you really need a larger plan, because it's going to take multiple years to get rid of it. The seeds can stay in the soil for quite a while, and if you have a good carpet of it, there will be a lot of work to be done. So again, the most cost-efficient way of getting rid of it is going to be chemical treatment, and that can be done in a couple different ways. But when you're looking at targeting species or individual buckthorn plants within an infestation, looking at the trees that are producing the seed and targeting those first is the way to go, because those are going to be the trees that create more buckthorn versus the male trees, which won't do that.
I would just like to remind our audience, you're listening to Conservation Corner on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP in Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm Emily Nelson, and I'm here today talking with Laurel Wilson about invasive species. Now I'd like to talk about one of our maybe most common invasive species, which is common tansy, and you see it all over Two Harbors, walking down by the breakwater or pretty much by any of the county roads or state highways.
Yep, it definitely likes the sunny areas with well-drained soils. And a lot of invasive species like soil disturbance. So that's something else that occurs along the roadsides and construction areas, gravel pits. So that's where we'll find a lot of our common tansy. But it is very common in Cook and Lake counties. And this species has clusters of circular yellow flowers. And also, if you crush up the leaves, it has a pretty distinct smell. If you've never done that before, try that out. Yep, so the species is native to Europe and Asia. But it can grow 2 to 5 feet tall, and it is perennial, which means that it comes back from the same root system year after year. And in order to really get rid of it, you have to either completely remove that root system or make sure that you kill the roots of the plant. So that can be pretty tricky. It's got pretty deep roots.
Why is tansy a problem for us?
Well, like other invasive species, it grows in it's an aggressive grower. Has an aggressive growth habit. So you'll see these very dense stands of it, and it produces a lot of seed. So one individual plant can create many, many more of itself and stays in the seed bank for quite a while. So even if you get rid of the plants that are there, it'll come back year after year. You really have to get rid or keep on a certain population until you don't see any coming up at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not edible by any of our wildlife and is toxic to livestock. So if it gets into a field or an area where you have any livestock at all, they won't eat it. Or if they do, it'll make them sick. So it's not something you want there. And it's not something that you want in your native ecosystems either, because it will crowd out your native species.
All right. So how about spotted knapweed? What does that look like?
Right, so spotted knapweed is another one of our perennial herbaceous plants. So they die back above ground every year, but the root system stays alive. That's the perennial part. So spotted knapweed has multiple stems, and then on the top of the stems, it'll have these bright purple flowers. So it's actually quite pretty, but it is something that we do not want around. And it also likes sunny areas with well-drained soil. Usually it'll be found in areas with gravel or sand. And also, again, commonly found on roadsides or disturbed areas. It likes the sun. It likes soil disturbance.
Why is it called spotted knapweed?
So it has very pretty flowers. And underneath those flowers, there are little triangular leafy-looking pieces that have brown spots at the top. So that's why it's called spotted knapweed. And those pieces that are triangular are called bracts. But I don't want to overwhelm you with plant terminology. The leaves of spotted knapweed are pretty distinct as well. They've got interesting lobing to them. You'll have to look up a picture. But they also have a blue-green color. So if you compare it to kind of grasses around it, you'll be able to see that bluish color to it as well. And in the first year, usually spotted knapweed won't flower. It'll just be some leaves on the ground. So the second year is when it'll produce flowers.
Oh, and do you know where they originate?
Yep, spotted knapweed is from Europe and Asia.
What is the best way to control spotted knapweed?
So spotted knapweed can be pretty easily pulled or dug up. It has a pretty deep root system, so you do have to make sure you get all of it. But in comparison to something like tansy, it does seem to be able, you can pull it a little bit more easily. And then burning the plants to get rid of them is really the best option for that. So another interesting option for control of large populations of spotted knapweed, probably not the best option for private landowners, but for larger land managers, if you have a large population of spotted knapweed, using something called biological control is an option. So this is when you bring in a natural predator of your plant species or other species to control it. So for spotted knapweed, there are quite a few different biological controls available. Some of them are weevils that feed on either the seed head or the roots of the plant. So another interesting option for control of this species.
So Minnesota has several invasive thistle species, but I'd like to focus on just the Canada thistle, since that's the one we saw the most of this summer while we were doing invasive plant surveys.
Yep, Canada thistle is a very common species in Lake County. So the way that you can tell this from other thistles is if you look below where the flower is, There are, the little triangular bracts or triangular leafy pieces of the plant right under the flower. And on Canada thistle, they don't have a large menacing-looking spine. If you think of something like bull thistle, they have that. The seed or flowering head looks very menacing because it has a large spine coming out from underneath the flowers. But Canada thistle does not. And Canada thistle is also one of the few perennial thistles, meaning that it comes back year after year from the same root system. So that root system can actually be very, very deep. It grows, you know, feet every year. So it makes it very challenging to get rid of. And despite the fact that Canada thistle is called Canadian thistle or Canada thistle, it's not native to North America. It's actually from Europe, Asia, and Northern Africa.
Oh, interesting. I wonder how it got that name.
Yeah, I don't know.
What would be a good way to control Canada thistle?
A different way of controlling Canada thistle, since digging it up isn't really an option since its roots are so deep and you'd have to remove all of them to really kill an individual plant. If you continuously mow Canada thistle, that can really set it back or at least keep it from spreading through seed. So mowing it when it gets about, you know, just 3 inches tall even, keeping it mowed.
So I know that there's an infestation of Japanese knotweed in Two Harbors near Burlington Bay. Can you describe what that looks like?
Sure. So Japanese knotweed is interesting. It kind of almost has a bamboo look to it. It's got hollow stems, and it can grow fairly tall, actually. So it has very large heart-shaped leaves. And it also, in the fall, gets this very unique reddish-brown color to it. So if you see something that looks a little bit like bamboo with big heart-shaped leaves and that interesting reddish-brown color in the fall, there's quite a lot of it around the Duluth area. So if you need an example, that's where you should look. But Japanese knotweed is also from Asia, as you might suspect from its name. Japanese knotweed can be found in moist areas, mostly in disturbed sites, but also people sometimes plant it next to their houses. So you can find it just planted in people's yards as well. But once it starts to spread into wet areas, the way that it's actually spread from location to location is through root fragmentation. So it doesn't spread much through production of seed, but when its roots are able to be transported through flowing water is when it really becomes a problem, and that's how it's mostly spread throughout an area once it's established.
And why is Japanese knotweed such a problem? I've heard that it can cause a lot of structural damage.
Yeah, so it does have really extensive root systems that can break through the foundations of buildings even, but also just through sidewalks and things like that. So you don't want it planted near your house or near any, you know, parking area or sidewalk because it can cause damage with that. But also, like other species, it just grows very aggressively. It's difficult to get rid of once it's established, and it has negative impacts on the native vegetation.
Okay, and how can we control Japanese knotweed?
Well, the control is pretty difficult. I think because of it's such a high priority in Lake County that if you have it on your property and you're interested in getting rid of it, that contacting Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District is your best option. Because it's something that we're really concerned about, and it is very challenging to get rid of. Pretty much mowing isn't effective. You can't dig it up because it's dangerous to have the roots around that they could spread and regenerate somewhere else. And really prescribed fire doesn't work. You really need to have the proper chemical. And so the Soil and Water Conservation District can help you direct you to the right chemical.
Last but not least, we have purple loosestrife.
Yep, so purple loosestrife is another perennial herbaceous plant, so it dies back above ground but not below ground every year. And it grows in moist areas, unlike a lot of the other ones that we've talked about today. It really likes, you know, ditches, marshes, shorelines, streams, anywhere that there could be above ground water or moisture. So it's originally from Europe and Asia, but it was brought over, I think, in the nursery trade originally because it has these really beautiful bright purple flowers that are very attractive. But it is also very bad for our native vegetation and also native wildlife. And I guess just a little bit of a description of it. So if you see it, you'll be able to identify it properly. It gets anywhere from like 3 feet to 6 feet tall. And it has kind of an angular stem or triangular stem with smooth edged leaves that are opposite, and they're kind of hugging the stem. And then it has these very brilliant purple flowers, which will be gone at this time of year, but usually from July to September, you can see these flowers, and they grow in really dense clusters, although the flowers themselves are pretty small, only, you know, less than an, you know, half an inch would mm-hmm. be an individual flower, but a lot of them on a single stem.
What kinds of problems does purple loosestrife cause?
So purple loosestrife is something we don't want because it gets into these wet areas where there generally would be lots of grasses or different types of sedges or other plants. And those areas are really important for our waterfowl and other wildlife species as habitat and as food. So once we have purple loosestrife, we don't have any of those grassy areas that are adjacent to wet areas for the habitat. So it's really something that negatively impacts our wildlife species.
And how can purple loosestrife be controlled?
Digging and pulling can be an option because it is in wet areas. Sometimes that can help in removing it. But again, you really need to get the whole root system in order to control it. So if you are going to be digging, it's probably only useful if you have only a single plant or very few scattered plants. If there are a lot of them or dense patches of them, chemical treatment is probably the best option. We don't want this plant to take over our beautiful waterways in Lake County, so it's something that would be worth trying to actively control using, even if that requires the use of chemicals.
What would be the best place that people can go to find more information about these and other invasive species?
Sure. Our website, arrowheadinvasives.org, has information about the species that we're concerned about within the Arrowhead region, specifically Lake and Cook counties. So it's nice that it has, you know, information that's more specific to this region on that website.
Okay. And you've already talked about EdMaps and how we submit our data to their system. Can you talk about how people at home can use EdMaps to report any invasive species that they find?
So EdMaps, again, is the nationwide reporting system, and information that's reported there is available for anyone to use. So if you create an account with EdMaps, then you can go in and either identify on a map where you've seen a species and select that species to report it, and then that information is sent to the regional resource. That would be the Lake County Invasives team, so we can know where these priority species are. There are different applications for cell phones that you can use. If you're out in the woods and find one of these species, then you can use those applications right on your phone and mark that point using the GPS on your phone, actually. And we do rely on the public to report populations because some of the county is remote, that we can't be everywhere at once. So if you are in a remote area and find an invasive species population, you can report that both on our website at arrowheadinvasives.org, and also you can go to EdMaps if you'd like to report that.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, Laurel.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to our audience for tuning in to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Conservation Corner is produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District with funds from the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.